Good morning and welcome to the roundtable panel for this Wednesday, the 29th of April. It's very nice to have you with us, and we are honored as always. You can write to us, and we are. No guffawing by the panel.
No good deed goes unpunished.
At WAMC.org if you would like to get in on the conversation. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And we, again, very much like to hear from you. Let us introduce our panelists to you this morning. WAMC's Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, everybody.
Essayist, author, editor, and activist Barbara Smith is with us. Hello, Barbara.
Good morning.
And good morning. And political consultant Libby Post is back.
Hello.
Very nice to have you all here. Thank you very much, as always. Now, let us go to the news of the day and find out what's happening in this world of ours. Very complicated stuff, and we'll get to as many issues as we possibly can in the time that we have allotted. I am struggling a little bit to bring up the information, but I will. Here we go. All right. Obviously, the big story still is what's happening in Baltimore. Under curfew, Baltimore is calm after days of unrest. The mostly deserted streets stood in contrast to the blazes that had raged the night before after the funeral of Freddie Gray, who died after suffering an injury in police custody. So we look at this and we see the coverage last night, the television coverage that I saw on CNN was basically from 9:30 to 10 o'clock of them just like standing there waiting for something horrible to happen. And ultimately it didn't, thank God. Mm-hmm. And so there's that question of, okay, what's happening now? And obviously a good point I think made in the New York Times today on their editorial, okay, but what came before the riots that actually caused them? Barbara, you want in?
Oh, sure. Why not? Decades, if not centuries, of disinvestment and of continued racism and oppression. People are angry not just about the most recent incidents, although there have been an incredible string of them, as pointed out by President Obama, but they're also upset about the fact that the land of opportunity just doesn't seem to apply to communities like theirs. And that's not just a Baltimore problem. That's a national problem.
With that said, Barbara, do you think, after all, Maryland is a place where the South meets the North.
Right.
And so
it's a border state.
The tension is very high. Could something like that happen in Albany?
Absolutely. If you're talking about, I'm not talking about whether there would be a similar incident of civil unrest.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
I think that's not the point. The point is, are people living under conditions that are debilitating and that make them feel like there's no way out, as well as the continued tensions and conflicts with the police? I'm not talking about the Albany Police Department, but as I said, urban centers have similar problems in this country.
Actually, you said it isn't the point. I think it is the point. Let me just argue that with you. The question is this angst, this anger, this pent-up poverty and not letting anybody get up, is that the kind of thing that could explode anywhere? That's my question.
Actually, I was thinking about it this morning on the way in, about how we've been relatively lucky here that there hasn't been, I'm sure there has been police brutality in the poorer sections of town, but there hasn't been any trigger point. And I do think that something could happen here. I do think if some young Black man who was just minding his own business. I mean, this guy in Baltimore made eye contact with the lieutenant and ran, and that's why they went after him? That's absurd. That's just absurd. And if some young Black man or young Black woman here or an older person of color had a bad interaction with a cop and they went off, I think it could happen here, and I think it would spark some problems because there have been, the media hasn't covered, but there have been issues of unrest in both Arbor Hill and the South End during the summers in the past here. We just don't necessarily hear about them.
And there certainly have been reactions to recent incidents that have happened in Albany.
But they've been peaceful.
They wouldn't necessarily be on the scale.
Right. Right, because we're not that big. They've been peaceful reactions, though, not...
There's a lot of anger.
Yeah, there is a lot of anger. My thing is the anger is being taken out within the community where people live. And, you know, and so, you know, you see on the news last night a woman really upset because her store was looted and, you know, she's trying to make a living.
You're talking about the one who was employed at the sporting goods store. And then there was also a woman who I heard this morning talking about how I have asthma and I have no access to my prescriptions.
Right, I heard that before I left.
Right. So,
you know, I confess. I was on the bike this morning and I was watching Morning Joe. And for a little while, not our Morning Joe, but you know, the right wing Morning Joe who used to be a right wing congressman.
Right.
What really struck me about him is that he was really going out there to talk about the cycle of poverty in the United States and how we had to do something about it. This is a guy who had always been with the Republicans on virtually everything. And now it was almost as if he was punting, trying to put himself back into the mix by saying, this is terrible, the conditions that we have in our inner cities, and something has to be done about it. I was astounded.
Well, I was watching the same thing that you were. Exactly the same thing. One of the things that he said is that liberals believe in trickle-down social programs, and people who are to the right of that believe in trickle-down economics. He said neither of them work. Now, he didn't get much farther, nor did the panel, but the thing is that what people who are really experts about these problems, and I consider the Harlem Children's Zone in Jeffrey, Canada, to be an expert.
Yes.
What they propose and what they stand for is strategic wraparound interventions. The philosophy of the Harlem Children's Zone is that we provide for poor children and families in Harlem, but particularly the children, because it's primarily around educational opportunity and success, we provide all the resources that middle-class families take for granted. And education, this is my thought, I'm not quoting him, but I assume that we're on the same page about that. Education is the best anti-violence strategy there is.
But Barbara, you're right. But Morning Joe would have seen that, Scarborough would have seen that as a trickle-down program. In other words, he would be wrong that if you give kids a lunch or if you give them tutoring.
It's not about lunch. It's about...
Or tutoring, or as I said, or any of the other kinds of... Or health care.
Our after-school activities or therapy and counseling for continued trauma living in violent neighborhoods, or as the Harlem Children's Zone has done, they have gotten rid of drug houses. Because they realize you can't have successful children who are, you know, succeeding and able to focus on academics if they're surrounded by chaos. And that's what the point, that's what a lot of people were saying that I saw interviewed in Baltimore. People are making this a similar point. Surprising to hear Joe do it.
But my point really was, it was almost as if the guy had been caught with his pants down intellectually. That he knew that, well, first of all, there's some background here. He's on MSNBC, and everybody knows that MSNBC is sort of to the left of center in terms of most of their programming, a good deal of it. And I'm sure he's on some kind of notice that our people really don't want to hear this right-wing stuff. But it was almost as if he had had an epiphany.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think everything that's gone on, you know, from Ferguson to Eric Garner to Drayvon Martin to Baltimore.
Tamir Rice in Cleveland.
Yeah, Tamir Rice to what's going on in Baltimore. I mean, it's brought these issues to the forefront, and you have to be totally have blinders on not to see some of the connections or not want to recognize the connections between the systemic racism and the economic inequality and what's going on. And to me also having a man of color in the White House, you know, I think all of those things are connected, and some people act out on their racism because they think they can because of the disrespect for the man in the White House in the highest levels of government in Senate and Congress. And you see that trickle down. If you want trickle down, you see that trickle down in behavior, which has always been there, the fomenting of that behavior of police against people of color, poor people, people without means. it's just really come to the forefront. And I think Joe Scarborough, on one hand, yes, MSNBC is to the left of center, although I've been reading things about them trying to get more centrist to maintain their viewership. But how can one not recognize, if you are thinking at all, how can not one not recognize what's going on and that the economic inequality and the lack of resources and the inability for people to bootstrap?
And interestingly enough, though, where it went this morning on that show was he got into blaming black elected officials and asking, what have you done? And I'm thinking, but what have you done?
Right.
It's just like, it was so crazy.
And that's the fallback.
That is really crazy to me.
That's the fallback of him going back to his conservative roots.
Right. Oh, what has the Black Caucus done? Like, it's a Black Caucus. It's not all the Congress, you know?
Right, yeah.
I know I introduced this, but I'll be honest with you. I don't want to give that guy more time than he deserves.
Yes. Okay, fine.
So
we'll
with
talk
that,
about Joe Donahue agreed. Instead. Let's talk about Joe Donahue.
No, stop.
Let's
take a break, and we'll be back, and we'll continue conversations. We'll go to some letters, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from the office of Dr. Vivian Letizia Woodstock, orthodontic, cosmetic, and general dentistry, serving the Hudson Valley since 1986. WoodstockDentist.com. Bard College Master of Arts and Teaching Program, offering one-year full-time and two-year part-time master's degrees in teacher certification, Teaching What Matters, bard.edu/MAT. And Windy Hill Farm Nursery, Orchard, and Garden Shop, Great Barrington, offering a selection of spring-blooming magnolias, shade blow, witch hazel, flowering cherries, and plum in both small and specimen sizes. WindyHillFarmInc.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Barbara Smith, Libby Post are the panel, make up the panel this morning. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. We just have a few minutes before we go to our BBC news break at the bottom of the hour, and we have a few letters.
Yes, we do, Joe. Thank you for that. Howard says, until the nation as a whole addresses systematic poverty in our cities, we will never fulfill the dreams of our founders or the founders of the world's major religions. It is interesting yesterday that we hear that Bernie Sanders, otherwise known as Bernard Sanders by the New York Times, which is absurd, running for president, because these are the very issues he's been talking about since day one. Narcissa writes, why are we discussing the looting and unrest of Baltimore as if a reflection of the African-American community that needs to be justified? Some people, mainly young men, took advantage of the situation to be wild. That they are the same color as those protesting is irrelevant. I am not, after all, associated with the mainly young men in Keene, New Hampshire, who rioted during the Pumpkin Festival because I like pumpkins, am I? Riots that got minimal coverage, I would add. And then, Richard says, yes, clearly we continue to have massive race issues in this country. However, we can't continue to use this as a reason to damage our communities. This is not just an urban black issue. This is an issue for all communities of poverty, urban, rural, black and white. I would say that the larger issue to racism is the lack of social capital in our community. This goes to the heart of what has made the Harlem Children's Zone so successful in helping to change the community around it, and not just the students who attend. It went on a little longer, and as you all know, we have a limit. What is the...
140 characters. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is a Twitter limit, but, you know, we sort of know it when we see it.
Yeah. And you saw what happened to Twitter yesterday. Philip, socioeconomic inequality is equally problematic with inner cities. African Americans, Latinos, and other people of color, and deep rural areas, often white folk, in quotes. Please stay focused on inequality and how this is not an issue of race. Did you want to speak to that?
Absolutely. It is an issue of race, because when you look at the statistics, people of color are disproportionately poor in the United States, and that is true over centuries. So to say that you can't talk about class in the United States if you don't talk about race in tandem, because they inflect each other, they have deep impact upon each other. The fact that, as I said, people of color are disproportionately poorer is not because we're lazy and stupid.
Right.
I'm sorry if it sounds sarcastic.
The cards have been stacked. It's built in.
Yeah. And one of the ways that you look at that is by looking at wealth as opposed to income, because wealth goes across generations. So when you look at average wealth, and these are ballparks, like if a white family, their average wealth, that's something you can turn into negotiable capital quickly, like money, stocks, and jewels. And in any event, if an average white family has, say, $70,000 in wealth, and an average black family has $10,000 in wealth, that's not about going to work every day. That's about inherited privilege.
And Bob says, young people who have to get up for work or school in the morning don't spend their nights rioting in the streets. I don't know that that's absolutely true. No jobs and lousy schools make such outbreaks nearly inevitable when triggering events happen. And that's from Bob. Let's see here.
We're just about time for one more.
Okay. And let's see. Michael says, with all that misery down in Baltimore, there are a couple of signs of hope, like the mother who smacked the daylights out of her son when she caught him rioting and throwing stones at police cars, or the woman who couldn't get her medications because the mob burned down her CVS. But it wouldn't stop her from cleaning up her neighborhood. They're not going to stop me from keeping my town clean, she said.
All right. We welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also go to our website, which is WAMC.org/roundtable. We'll return with Alan and Barbara and Libby and Joe, and we'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Wednesday morning. Very nice to have you with us. Our panelists this morning at WAMC's Alan Chartok, essayist, author, editor, and activist Barbara Smith, and political consultant Libby Post. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. And Alan, I think we sort of went in the middle of the letter, so we have a few more, and then we'll move on to other stuff.
We do. And I'm going to go to Irene, who says, Newburgh, New York is a city where there is unrest. New York State should at once work towards the betterment. Remember the NBC white paper film of the 1960s on Newburgh? Many left the suburbs. Urban renewal came in and did not finish the job. Albany was a city where Nikita Khrushchev was brought in a different way to avoid the slums of Albany when he visited. New York City has many citizens making $25,000 or less. We live on the fringe, says Irene. And Rich says, will the people who protested in Baltimore receive the same court consideration that former congressman of Florida Trey Radel got when he was arrested for purchasing cocaine from undercover cop? Radel had no jail time, and his record was expunged, and the court case was handled in record time, and he was a Republican. And let's see. We did that one. I guess that's it, Joe. I think that's it.
All right. Anything anybody else wants to get to before we move on to other
subjects? I think it's a major story, by the way, and I think it goes to the heart of the American experience, that we have rich getting richer, poor getting poorer, and these pockets of abject poverty in this country. And we will be sorry if we don't address that poverty, A, because it's the right thing to do, and B, because, as Franklin Roosevelt and so many others knew, if you deprive people of everything, you're going to get this kind of thing.
It destabilizes democracy.
You're going to have revolution.
Right.
Let us move on to other subjects, because there are other subjects to talk about. We mentioned this yesterday, and that was yesterday was the day that the Supreme Court started to hear the case on same-sex marriage. And the Supreme Court's historic consideration Tuesday of whether the Constitution protects the rights of same-sex couples nationwide to marry seemed to come down to a familiar arbiter, Justice Anthony Kennedy, which I believe is exactly what Alan said yesterday on the show. That's normally a safe haven for gay rights activists. Kennedy has written each of the court's major victories advancing their movement, but the question after the hearing seemed to be whether forcing reluctant states to allow same-sex union was a logical extension of the court's ruling or too much too fast. Kennedy seemed to be working it out. On one hand, he pressed lawyer Larry Benito. Is that correct? Does anyone know?
Mary? Yeah, it's Bonato.
Benato, representing
I don't know the pronunciation,
gay couples, challenging states' bans to explain why the court should change the tradition of marriage as only between a man and a woman when the concept of same-sex marriage is so new. this definition of traditional marriage has been with us for millennia, Kennedy said, and it's very difficult for the court to say, oh, well, we know better.
Well, you know, Earl Warren was a genius, as I have said before. And unexpectedly, and to the great dismay of Eisenhower, his appointee to the Chief Justiceship changed the face of America. Mm-hmm. We know that. Brown versus Board of Education and so many other major cases. And so you wonder, when you're talking about a democracy, I'll get into trouble for this, but when you're talking about a democracy, you got a Congress, a Senate, and a House of Representatives, which is supposed to be, you know, making laws that benefit the people. And they don't go there. And now you have a Supreme Court of the United States. And this is the question Kennedy is asking, basically. And you have a Supreme Court of the United States says, ooh, we just looked in the Constitution, as Earl Warren did, and did the right thing. And he certainly did the right thing. So then this role, this floating role of the House of Representatives, the Senate, and the Supreme Court as the countervailing balance becomes a very interesting one. And to some degree, I think Kennedy was playing with everybody. I think he was having fun.
And I think he's going to come down on this. I've been saying this all along. He'll be the swing vote. He always has been on these issues. And, you know, the whole idea about marriage and procreation. Well, then what about the heterosexual people? And I can name a couple who, not a couple, but a couple of couples who I know who are straight, who never had kids. So they shouldn't have the right to get married. And on the other hand, there are plenty of us who are lesbians and gays who are raising children, you know, and some of us actually carry them to term. You know, lesbians can get pregnant. We're women. We can do that. You know, what a novel concept. And so the whole thing about procreation is just a fallacy. And once again, going back to a very strict construct and a religious strict religious construct of what marriage should be to protect people. And okay, in the 37 or 39 states where you can now get married, let me ask, has any straight couple filed for divorce or seen their marriage crumble because the gay guys next door got married? No.
Well, I think you're right on target. I think that's exactly where it is. No matter how you feel about the appropriateness of gay marriage, why are you so concerned?
Because people are holding on to a way of life. I mean, there are, of course, parallels to, systematic racial prejudice and bigotry. It doesn't make any difference in reality, but it makes a difference in people's sense of who they are and their sense of superiority. So if indeed people who are not heterosexual can get married, that means that heterosexuals are not superior.
Right, you know? Right. And why do heterosexuals feel like they need to be superior?
Right.
I mean, other than that's what we've been socialized in institutional heterosexism, you know, but why? You know better than anybody else.
Indeed.
I mean, give me a break.
Indeed. And the thing about reproduction, which I thought was absurd as well, it's like the potential force. So one male, one female, biological male, female, they have the potential to have a baby. So we're going to do everything possible to shore them up and make sure they have, you know, the recognition of the state, even if they're not able to. Because that's a big reason, infertility is a big reason, not just choice. We didn't want to have children. There's also infertility.
Right.
It's crazy. But one of the things I want to talk about is this notion that that the people should be left to vote on this in referendums.
Well, they're voting with polling, which is very interesting because the polling keeps on increasing.
Right.
That's right. And the reason it keeps on increasing in my mind is that I think people know the game is up. In other words, it's going to happen. We're doing it. And therefore, the bandwagon takes effect.
It's just like when AIDS first hit. Not that marriage and AIDS are the same thing, but when AIDS first hit, anybody who was HIV positive was a pariah. Mm-hmm. As time went on and people realized we're talking about our neighbors, our cousins, our sons, you know, our fathers, things got normalized and people realized that they couldn't get it just from breathing the same air.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
exactly.
People embraced it and helped it, cut down on AIDS and help the people who were sick. This is the same thing. And just it's about relationship building. Just like people recognize we need civil rights. It's about relationships. I live in a I'm like me and the next door neighbor are the only Democrats in my neighborhood. Okay, where I live, you know, just the luck of the draw. But we have relationships with these people, and everything is fine. People get to know other people. We're just human beings, just like everybody else. And that's where this is coming from, because people went, somebody went to a gay marriage, went to a wedding, and it was lovely, and the people loved each other, and everybody was so happy. And so they're like, oh, what's the big deal?
Yeah. So Joe, you're Catholic, and you know, it's so interesting that at the basis of a good deal of this, if you think about what Libby just said, is the idea that sex should only be used
for
procreation. And that a lot of people buy into that, which I think is something that influences the way we think about this.
Am I wrong? I think really do buy into.
Well,
that.
I think you know. I think there is the church's position, and then there's what most Catholics believe.
Yes, indeed.
And I was just looking at the numbers of 68% of the Catholics who were
pro-gay marriage.
Were pro-gay marriage that were polled. But you know, I how serious of an argument do you think this procreation argument is? I mean, because to me that puts my marriage in question.
Right.
I mean, so I have my wife and I.
That's an interesting point.
We're unable to have children. And you know, so what does that say about the legitimacy of our marriage? So for that to even be questioned, that seems like an extremely slippery slope to me. If you're going to hang your hat on that argument.
Well, the only reason I raise it is that we're trying to figure out here what it is that in the American psyche that gets a large number of people to have some legitimacy about not having gay marriage in
the idea
in this country.
Between two men.
Or women.
Well, no.
Yeah,
I think Libby's
they're
right.
They're not so... Yeah.
Not so with the women.
Yeah.
The women, the boys loved thinking about two women together.
No question.
Okay, but the right. Thank you, Alan. And I've always known that about you ever since graduate school. But be that as it may, the idea of two men having sexual relations sends some people over the edge.
That's exactly right.
And that's what this all comes down to. And people are so, we are basically a puritanical country when it comes to sex, and people just got to get over it.
But
it's
we're
about
not.
Love. Oh, yeah, we are.
No.
We are.
We're hypocritical.
Hypocritical, but that hypocrisy is based in this puritanical
missionary
position.
I'm sorry?
The roots
mindset.
Of the culture. I think that's what
we
have. Not necessarily present day,
right.
But where did we come from?
Right. We have a missionary position mindset about sex.
Yeah.
Man on top, woman on the bottom, that's it. And you go to Europe, you go anywhere else, there's none of this. I mean, there's anti-gay stuff, but the thing about sex is not as crazy. But that's what this is. This
that's
comes
sort
down
of
to.
Unique to this country.
It
this
certainly
obsession
is.
With
it is
sexual.
Okay,
right.
So what do we know about Justice Kennedy, and what do we and what can we read? You know, how can we read the tea leaves as to of the vibe that was given off yesterday?
Well, the whole question here is. Whether or not the Supreme Court believes whether they have the right to expand the 6,000-word United States Constitution and find something. Certainly, Earl Warren did it. We all worship him and say this is a terrific thing that you did here. But I think when you get a guy like Kennedy, who was appointed, I believe, by a Republican president, you know, there are always these sort of political tangents. What do I owe to the people who put me here?
That should not be the case.
Right.
No,
right?
Should and is, I always tell everybody, Barbara, are two different things.
But he's already on the record.
Yeah, that's
you know,
true.
I mean, the way things have fallen is that Roberts has taken care of Obamacare because he was the deciding vote.
And he had to.
And Kennedy has taken care of gay rights issues.
To legitimize the court.
Right, right.
I agree with that.
You know, and the rhetoric out of Alito and Scalia
Thomas.
And well, he never says anything.
He never said anything.
Right. But Alito and Scalia is so homophobic and so, you know, not representative of the most of the country now. 61% of the people. Who would have thunk it? Mm-hmm. Who would have thunk it?
Never.
You know, when marriage became legal in Massachusetts 10, 12 years ago, that 61% of the country now is in favor of marriage equality. Never in my lifetime.
But absolutely. I understand it. I truly understand the bandwagon, which is which is, if it's going to happen, I'm for it. I want to be on the winning side.
Right. And and we all know people. You know, as more of us come out of the closet, we build relationships with people. It's like, what's the big deal?
Who's this, who is the presidential candidate who said he'd go to the reception and not to the wedding?
Not to the wedding.
Yeah, who was that?
I think it was Rubio.
Marco Rubio.
And who? My response to that was, who'd invite him?
Well, it is interesting, nice, but that is so interesting because was it Rubio that where the gay guy had given the reception?
Yes,
and he got terribly beat up.
He got really beat up.
And really walked out in front of the microphones and virtually cried and said, I'm so sorry.
It was either Rubio or Cruz he did that for. I can't remember which one.
It may have been Cruz,
I think it was Cruz.
Yeah.
But, you know, A, we're not inviting you, so don't even say whether you'd come to the reception. I mean, give me a break. Uh-huh. We want people who love us to come to our weddings. Just like anybody else who gets married.
Well, Libby, do you speak for the entire lesbian community, or are you speaking for yourself?
I don't know. What do you think, Barbara?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay,
I mean, why would you?
The
thing is, weddings are very fraught anyway. No matter whether they're heterosexual or not, there's always drama.
Uncle Sam is always there.
Right,
but there's always drama in a family.
Yeah, families are always.
And
I read Ann Landers in Dear Abby, and she always says, it's your day, invite the people you want.
Right, but the thing is, Libby's right, and I completely agree.
On the other hand. Just for the hell of it. I don't know. On the other hand, don't do that to me because I'll forget exactly where I am.
No kidding.
And you know that. No, on the other hand, Libby makes a sterling point when she says, if somebody comes to the wedding and sees that, you know, we're just like them, there is something to be gained from that.
But that's not necessarily a person coming with hate in their heart and a huge ideological agenda.
That's
a person who said, well, I'm not sure if I understand or no. I just saw Pride, the wonderful movie
about the union
lesbian and gay community.
In Britain.
And,
London.
Yeah,
it was great.
Helping the minors. And it was just, I mean, that was a perfect movie for seeing, like, oh, well, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But, and then at the end, it's like,
what difference does it make?
What difference?
Right.
Let's take a break. We will come back and wrap up. We love getting your letters as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Upstate Divorce Mediation, specializing in helping couples who are seeking a legal separation or divorce. Offices in Albany, Saratoga, and Catskill. UpstateDivorceMediation.com. The Honest Wait Food Co-op in Albany, New York, hosting a public strategic planning event. honestweight.coop/community-events for details. At Workshop, a women and employee-owned marketing agency of 30 professionals with offices in Lake Placid, Albany, and New York City. At workshop.com. And Forum Pharmaceuticals, evaluating the safety and effectiveness of investigational medication for Alzheimer's disease. 518-264-1130.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable discussion this morning, and we just have a few minutes left. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll go to a few letters and then we'll hit our final topic.
Okay, so Waldron says, marriage is between one man and one woman according to God, period. Waldron from Beacon. Okay, and
not the God I talk to.
What'd you say?
Not the God I believe
in.
And
you're the president of your synagogue.
That's right.
Yeah, so that means...
And
something.
We got married under the chuppah in the synagogue, so...
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And God was there.
And here's one I think is supposed to be funny. I'm not sure. Marriage. No one over the age of 45 should be allowed to marry unless he and or she swears they're going to try to have children. Certainly not 60, 70, and 80-year-olds. Let's keep them under control.
I think it's sarcasm.
Yeah,
yes.
No, it's fun. The problem with people who write sarcastic letters is it's very hard when the words are there to hear the voice.
Yeah.
And that happens. And John says, we need to look at prehistory. What are the roots of marriage? To paraphrase Tina Turner, what's love have to do with it? It was all about purity of, yeah. What'd you say?
I think the song was Got to Do, but that's all right.
Yeah, okay.
I want people to sing it right.
Yeah, okay. I just want people to sing it right.
Yeah.
It was all about purity of bloodlines and inheritance. That's why the state is involved.
It's all about property.
And Reed says, government is involved in marriage due to legal and financial rights conferred on people who are married. If those rights are removed from marriage and labeled something different, there is no reason to exclude any two people from that legal status. And Nate says, I think the situation is very simple, though through free trade agreements and concentration of corporate power, Americans are forced to compete for wages with third world countries. There are fewer jobs and lower wages for those jobs left. And that is really interesting when you get the contemporary debate over our new trade agreements with mm-hmm. Asia and the ones that we've gone through. It's a very profound point, frankly.
Yeah, that was back to the prior topic.
Yeah, you know, mm-hmm. it was. But, mm-hmm. well, I try to read.
Oh, no, I'm not. I just want to make sure that people are following.
Okay.
Because I was waiting for the point about the Supreme
right.
Court.
Okay, so I'm going to read part of this one. Academics have known the inseparability of race, class, and gender, something you were saying, Barbara, factors in social inequality for over 20-plus years. We need to get the message out to the public and policymakers. I would think Abraham Lincoln knew about it also. And Ryan says, everyone knows a good sex life is critical to a marriage. If you only have sex to procreate, you're going to have a hard time making your marriage work, which explains why. I think I don't want to read the rest of this. Okay. It's only because I don't want to insult anybody.
Okay, fine. Okay. We appreciate that.
Yeah. Okay, Joe, that's what I
All right. Think. Let's move on to other news. And I guess, of course, we will talk about the other there's so many huge things happening in our world, but we will we'll talk about what is going on as in Nepal. The many villages are opening up, and there is more and more knowledge now as to the damage and to the death toll, which is now approaching 5,000. And so it is something that we continue to deal with, we continue to look at. Yesterday, the big news was the government in Nepal saying that we will come back, we can come back, that this is possible in the face of this horrible tragedy.
I'm not sure what we can even add to that. One of the things that struck me, though, it was the amount of aid that the United States was sending, which was $10 million, I didn't think that sounded like a huge amount. I don't know if it's going to be cyclic. This is the first installment, but what did anybody else?
Yeah, I thought that was not a lot.
Right.
Although you never know, there could go a lot further than it mm-hmm. goes here.
Right.
You know, and what they really need are people
right.
as well, which we are sending.
We're
and
helping
I mean,
with.
It's you know, when we talk about poverty and living conditions, you know, when you look at the people there and now living, their structures, what they call their homes, were totally destroyed because there was absolutely no building code. And, you know, people, I mean, this is a major catastrophe with major loss of life. And the government was like, well, maybe we need to start looking at our infrastructure. Well, yeah, you know, but people don't want to. Governments don't want to do that. It's not sexy.
And Libby, one of the poorest societies in the world.
And it's very, very poor there.
So they don't have unlimited resources right. to do that. We started this program by talking about what we could be doing in this country,
right.
one of the richest in the world, to help those people who are most in need here, and we don't do it.
Right.
While you're right.
No, there is definitely parallels.
And let me say that there was a study done just today that came out that talked about the weather events that we're having all over the world and showing that they are increasing at an incredible rate. And there is some more than speculation, scientific evidence, that this is directly tied to what we do to our environment. Mm-hmm.
But are earthquakes really tied to climate change?
Well, they could be tied to other things. I
mean, like fracking.
Yeah, we know.
Fracking, definitely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we have no clue what fracking on one side of the world means to the other side of the world.
Interesting.
Right.
You know, because it's the plate shift.
Yeah.
The mm-hmm. plate shift, and we have no clue, you know.
Mm.
And I do think, you know, some of this, I think that global warming or climate change or whatever we want to call it, you know, I remember when we used to call it acid rain, you know, there has to be connections. We just don't know what they are yet. But there are, these events are getting more and more horrific and more prevalent. And we have to do something.
Of that, there is no doubt.
Yeah.
The question that occurs to a lot of people is a what, as you say,
right.
And or also, is it too late?
Well, there was that.
It's too late for some things.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's not too late, you know, I think, for a change in direction and really being, you know, to err seriously on the side of caution.
I mean, here we have the conservatives wanting us to have marriage only if there's procreation, right? And look at the world we're bringing these children into. It's really, it's one of those, the big moral dilemmas of my consciousness is, and I have friends that have kids, you know, do we want to bring children into this world that is so so fraught with we don't know if the world as we know it is going to exist in another 50 years, like all the science fiction we read.
We said, what would you do? Stop it. I look at our
little
Noah.
I know. And you never know. And he could be the one who could grow up to change everything.
Turns it all around.
You know, yeah. I mean, but still, it's like all the science fiction we read, you know, it's all coming true. It's really
scary. Well, there are people who do not have children for exactly that reason.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to end it there. Okay. And we thank you all very much. And certainly keep the letters coming. Roundtable at WAMC.org. That's a very definitive pat on your iPad there, Libby. We're done. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan, Barbara, and Libby, thank you so much for being with us this morning. And the roundtable continues after this.